जय राधा माधवा कुंज बियारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बियारी। गोपी जनवाला गिरिवर दारे, जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवर दारे। यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वन चारी, यमुना तीर वन चारी। कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन भला गिरिवर दारी, यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वन चारी, यमुना तीर वन चारी। हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Antara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrindaki Netai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Continued readings from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 18. The residents of Jambudvip offer prayers. Text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 18. Of course, it's the prose, so we may not chant it all together, but it is a prayer, so maybe I'll try to just chant it once, if that's okay. Om Ram Rim Rum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya Sarvaguna Visheshaya Vilakshitatmane Akutinam Chittinam Chetasam Viveshanam Chapidite Sodasha Kalaya Chando Mayayana Mayayamrita Mayaya Sarva, Mayaya Sahase, Ojase, Balaya, Kantaya, Kamaya, Namaste, Ubhar Yatra Bhuyat. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesha, controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. As the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. The 5 sense objects and 11 senses, including the mind, are his partial manifestations. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus non-different from him. And he is the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also non-different from him. Indeed, he is the husband and provider of necessities for all living entities. The purpose of all the Vedas is to worship him. Therefore, let us offer him our respectful obeisances. May he always be favorable towards us in this life and the next. Purport. In this verse, the word maya, maya, is further explained in regard to how the Lord expands his mercy in different ways. Prasya shaktir vividhaya shriyate. The energies of the Supreme Lord are understood in different ways. In this verse, he is described as the original source of everything, even our body, senses, mind, activities, prowess, bodily strength, mental strength, and determination for securing the necessities of life. Indeed, the Lord's energies can be perceived in everything, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:8, Rasoham Apsukanteya. The taste of water is also Krishna. Krishna is the active principle of everything we need for our maintenance. This verse offering respectful obeisances unto the Lord was composed by Rama, the goddess of fortune, and is full of spiritual power. Under the guidance of a spiritual master, everyone should chant this mantra and thus become a complete and perfect devotee of the Lord. One may chant this mantra for complete liberation from material bondage. And after liberation, one may continue to chant it while worshiping the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha Loka. All mantras, of course, are meant for this life and the next life, as Krishna himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrita namashyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasade. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, the great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. A devotee who both in this life and the next life chants the Maha Mantra, or any mantra, is called Nitya Yukto Pasaka. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Agnamayam Dati Svapnantikam Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this section is the residence of Jambudvipa offer prayers, and we're hearing now the prayers of Lakshmi Devi, who worships the Lord in his most merciful form as Kamadev. Fully absorbed in devotional service, she chants that following mantra, that prayer. So Prabhupada is indicating the benefit of actually offering prayers. He's explaining that one can chant this mantra for complete liberation, and after one can continue to chant while worshiping the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha Loka. So I thought we might just take a look at the nature of this prayer, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of prayers, and that is to help us, to actually give us an insight on the nature, the consciousness of the pure devotees when they offer prayers. And Prabhupada always encouraged that we can learn these prayers, and if we offer prayers, that's one of the aspects of devotional service, and it helps to do a lot of things. So we'll just take a look. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesh, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. So it's a very important principle of devotional service. We see many of our great acharyas, they've composed so many prayers, even books, just books, nothing but prayers and offerings. And so what this is doing, it's helping to actually open our heart a little more before we come to the Lord. We know in our consciousness too, if we're just going about our day and we come before the deity, we may not feel, depending on our nature of consciousness, but we may not, you know, tears may not come from our eyes immediately. But by taking up the mood of offering a prayer, we're actually able to go deeply into a mood of gratitude. We see that most of these prayers, gratitude is a very important element. And here Lakshmi Devi is also highlighting a few of the specific aspects of Krishna to meditate upon and to appreciate. That Rishikesha, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything, as a supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. So this is rather unique statement, but it's very important. It actually really targets the root of illusion. Illusion meaning to see things separate from Krishna. This is the cause of all suffering, and illusion is to see things separate from Krishna. So here she's connecting the dots. She's Prabhupada gives example, if you find $100 bill, the best thing is to take it and return to that person. So everything in the universe is Krishna's energy, and it's our duty to make that connection, to paraphernalia, all the things around us, and connect them back with Krishna. So she's explaining, he's the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities. He is the only enjoyer of their results. So oftentimes, under the concept of false ego, we've been hearing in Jiva Dharma that the soul gets these different coverings, false ego, and they have interesting names. But basically, these coverings are inducing us to try to enjoy the bodily, mental, and intellectual activities. Rather than understanding that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, our false ego is dictating us that I should enjoy. I should enjoy the mind, I should enjoy the mental activities, whatever. I should enjoy my bodily activities, and I should enjoy the intellectual activities. So this is what's separating us from Krishna. This is the divide, or the gap. And this is the whole nature of materialistic civilization. It's nothing but trying to enjoy these different things. Not seeing how they're connected to Krishna, not seeing how the body is described as a temple, as a vehicle for the soul, simply trying to enjoy it to the utmost through sense gratification. How could any good come from that? The mental activities, generally Prabhupada has said that everyone is basically on the mental platform. I think one time there was some story on an airplane, and Prabhupada pointed out to one of his disciples that by the influence of the modes of nature, all these people are simply on the mental platform, therefore they can have no good qualities. Their qualities are simply inauspicious, simply on the mental platform. So the whole society is on the mental platform. What I like, what I don't like. Yeah, they are yet to even understand that that's not who they are. They're not the mind. Actually, there's a deeper understanding. Actually, they're the soul. So simply based, the mind is simply telling, I like this, I don't like that. Therefore, when you hear people talking, mostly it's, I like this, I don't like that. All they talk about is themselves, generally, and it's what I like. I really love this kind of ice cream. I really hate so-and-so. It's all just a mental platform. So actually, the mind has a proper function, and it's meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. It's nothing but his energy. And the intellectual activities, this is also a very tempting field to enjoy, the intellect. Great philosophers and psychologists, they're very proud of their abilities. They become very famous, actually, in the world, in great universities like the University of Chicago. Many great professors there, but they may become proud, actually, of their abilities, not being able to make the connection. Not understanding that, actually, the intellect also has a function, and everything is meant to be used in Krishna's service. So we see in the lives of pure devotees, they've been able to realize Krishna's presence in all things, so they're able to connect everything back to Krishna. They use nothing... they do nothing of these activities are used except for anything but Krishna's service. The body is simply meant to, Ambarish Maharaj prays to take me to the temple. The legs take me to the temple, and the body pays obeisances. All these things are meant to be used actually in Krishna's service. The mind, this is a very important one. The mind is not meant to run its own program. Sometimes a computer may have its own program where it just runs an application. But if we let our mind do that, it's very dangerous, actually. We'll never become Krishna conscious. So it's very critical, actually. The mind, we have to fix the mind on Krishna, on the lotus feet of Krishna, actually. As Prabhupada says, this is the only way to control the mind, to fix it up at the lotus feet of Krishna. So by the process of remembrance, and that requires hearing, to always actually remember Krishna in every situation, that's the proper engagement of the mind. Everything else simply brings frustration and anxiety. And the intellectual activities, these are very useful. Krishna says, one who reads the Bhagavad Gita, who worships me with his intelligence. So this is the proper use of our intelligence to carefully understand the philosophy. That way also, it spiritualizes these activities that have been in contact with matter for so long, and that affords us the opportunity to revive our love of Krishna, which is exemplified by the prayers in these sections. Now further he says, he says the five sense objects and 11 senses, including the mind, are his partial manifestations. So again, being able to see the connection. This is very important. This is what Krishna explains in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how to see everything, all the nature of this material world, all the opulences or whatever beautiful, glorious things in this creation, they're simply a spark of Krishna's splendor. That actually Krishna has become everything. the sun, the moon, and he's giving all these beautiful descriptions. I'm Vishnu, I'm Brihaspati, I'm the Himalayas, I'm the lion. So these are ways actually by we perceive Krishna's presence in this world. And technically also, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains how every single thing, every speck, even an insignificant speck of dust, is Krishna's energy, and it actually is part of his creation. So what we need to do is actually see how all these things, the five sense objects, the 11 senses, are Krishna's energy, his manifestations. And when we do that, the tendency to try to enjoy them ourselves becomes greatly diminished. So we have to get, just like we wear glasses, we have to get the vision by studying Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, how everything is connected with Krishna. And that protects us from the great desire to try to lord it over and use things for our own enjoyment. So technically, it's a little interesting how actually the senses are Krishna's energy. As I was saying, the more we understand this, the more able we are to engage in service rather than try to exploit. There's a few sections in the Bhagavatam that explains actually technically how this is. I hope this won't be too dry, but I always found it very fascinating and uplifting, I mean, beneficial to understand how what we see around us is actually nothing but the energy of Krishna. So I'll just read it, maybe just a few paragraphs here. In the beginning of creation, nature assumes, by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, its form as the embodiment of all subtle and gross manifestations within the universe. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not enter the interaction of material manifestation, but merely glances upon nature. As the material elements headed by the Mahatattva are transformed, they receive their specific potencies from the glance of the Supreme Lord, and being amalgamated by the power of nature, they create the universal egg. So this is describing the material manifestation, that actually beyond the boundaries of the Vaikuntha is the causal ocean, and that is what surrounds the material universes. There, Karanadakshay Vishnu, he lies in the causal ocean and creates the universes. So Krishna, although he's in Goloka Vrindavan, he has nothing technically to do this. It is nothing but his energies acting. We were hearing Parasya Shaktir Vividhaya Shriyate, that everything is just the energies of Krishna acting. So here the energies of Mahavishnu are acting, manifesting the creation, the modes of material nature. Then it's explained, the unmanifested state of the eternal combinations of the three modes of nature is called Pradhan. It is called Prakriti, or material nature, in its manifested state. The Pradhan, nothing but the energy of Krishna, contains the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The five subtle elements, smell, taste, color, touch, and sound. The four internal or subtle senses, mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. And the five senses for gathering knowledge, the ability to smell, taste, feel, see, and hear. And the five acting senses. The 25th element is considered time. Time is considered to be the influence of the Supreme and also causes the materially deluded beings to fear death. So here we're just hearing this description out of all these things around us in the material world are nothing but the energy of Vishnu, of Krishna. And as we become purified, then the idea is that we fail to try to utilize them independently and selfishly, but rather use everything in Krishna's service. There was one more I just wanted to share. Yeah. Thereafter, in connection with the mode of ignorance, the Mahatattva generates the false ego. It is an expansion of the Supreme Being with creative principles and time for its fructification. Thus, this Mahatattva is the junction of matter and spirit, the starting point from when the spiritual energy begins to manifest or transform into the material creation. Therefore, behind everything in this material creation is the Supreme Person. So the problem with our modern understanding is that everything is impersonal. There is no, even amongst human beings interacting, we're very impersonal, what to speak of understanding the things around us. But actually everything, in one sense, is personal. We know in the spiritual world, actually, there's nothing but unlimited varieties of living entities in so many different shapes and forms, and all serving Krishna. So similarly, the material world is governed by personalities, and it's nothing but the energy of Krishna. And Krishna is the Supreme Person. So these are just helping to eradicate the misconception of a feeling of separateness from Krishna, which is the source of all suffering, actually. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus non-different from him. And he is the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also non-different from him. So this may sound also like the 10th chapter, The Opulence of the Absolute, that I am the ability in man. This is also what, of course, in another language, what this is doing is helping to humble us. Because the false ego is inducing us to become proud. Proud of the bodily situation, proud of the mental, the intellectual activities, proud of the bodily and mental prowess. This is what the nature of false ego is doing. But this knowledge is actually humbling us. Lakshmi Devi is praying that actually you're the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is not different from you. So seeing everything in his relationship with Krishna naturally humbles us. We see how dependent we are. It was mentioned earlier that he provides everything for the living entity's necessities. Just meditating on how dependent we are, something to take a breath or to eat anything, the jiva is always in this dependent position, always requiring some necessities. He is the husband and provider of necessities for all living entities. The purpose of all the Vedas is to worship him. Therefore, let us all offer him our respectful obeisances. May he always be favorable towards us in this life and the next. And so again, we can see, concluding this introductory prayer, that there's a great sense of subordination. Lakshmi Dev, of course, considering the Lord as her husband. And so she's explaining, may he always be favorable to us toward this life and the next. Again, highlighting the nature of the jiva being always dependent on the Lord's mercy. We can see actually that we're always seeking some shelter. This should be very clear to indicate that we're, of course, the Tatashta Shakti, that we're not the independent supreme controller. We're never on the position of Bhagavan or God, but we're always dependent on Krishna in every situation of life. And now we can tune into that, and by reading these prayers, actually get a sense of how the pure devotees are feeling and offer similar prayers. Then also Krishna becomes very inclined to us. He is always favorable towards his devotees. And it's also mentioned in this life and the next that after liberation one can continue to chant. Prabhupada mentions either this mantra or the Maha Mantra. In the verses quoted, Satatam Kirtayantomam, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, the great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So the same activities that are going on here, the worship of Krishna, that's what goes on in the spiritual world. Sometimes we get a glimpse of that. Sometimes, I know recently from me coming back in these ecstatic artis that we're having, the kirtans, sometimes the boundary of material and spiritual world seem to, sometimes Krishna gives us a glimpse of that, that it's the same thing going on. We see that everything is Krishna's energy and spiritual, then when the glorification of Krishna is there, what is the difference between the material and spiritual world? Prabhupada would say, these temples are Vaikuntha. So we see the devotees just chanting and dancing in ecstasy. These are the activities in the spiritual world, actually. Everyone is simply absorbed, serving Krishna, offering prayers, and utilizing these different activities or these different facilities that we have simply in Krishna service, never for our own sense gratification. A devotee who both in this life and the next chants the Maha Mantra or any mantra is called Nitya Yukta Upasaka. So this goes on eternally, and this is the nature of the spiritual energy, that we just get little tastes as we progress in spiritual life, but generally we understand that Krishna is eternally relishing this, and the devotees are eternally relishing his service, and it's actually inconceivable, and we can't even describe. Therefore, the scriptures can only give an indication of the nature of the spiritual experience that actually awaits all of us as we just continue this process. Here it's also mentioned with great determination. Krishna wants to see great determination. We won't make progress if we're not very determined, if we're not really sold on the goal. Actually, we have to be very prove to Krishna, this is actually what I want. And take the steps, not hold back. Krishna wants to see not only what we're giving, but what we're holding back also. There's a few other points I could mention, but maybe I'll just see if there's any comments or questions to make it a little more interactive, if I'm not putting everyone to sleep. Would anyone want to share or comment on something? Yes, Bhakti Glenn.
About your last statement, which is interesting, Krishna wants to know what we are and also what we don't. I was wondering if you could elucidate a little bit more on what we
do. Yeah, Krishna wants to see what we're giving, what we're doing. We can be doing so many things, but what is it that we're not doing? What is it that we're holding back? That's really an indication of where we're at, actually. So just like we may be doing so many things, but maybe we have something hiding behind our back. In other words, our attachments, the things that we don't want to give up, those are the things that Krishna is really, through the association of his devotees, through the scripture, he's encouraging us. No, you can give it up. You should give it up, actually, and you have to give it up if you want to come back to me. It's attachments. So what are we holding on to? What are our attachments to this world? What are our attachments in the same points? Our body, bodily attachments, mental attachments, intellectual attachments. We have to actually give these up. This is some of the Krishna's pastimes also signify these. We see many times he puts his devotees in a position where they have to surrender more and more. And we can certainly see this in the lives of great devotees in recent times also. But for example, we went in Vrindavan to the place where actually Krishna made the gopis surrender when they were in the water getting cold, and actually Krishna stole the garments of the unmarried gopi girls. And so it's a rather, you know, confidential pastime. Maharaj made a very broad point actually to help us, you know, more neophyte devotees make the connection that what he's doing is actually putting them in a position where they have to surrender more and more. For a chaste young girl, the thing that she's most attached to is just maintaining her chastity, or her shyness, actually. That's like in traditional Vedic culture, that's a big point for young women. So for Krishna to do that to them, he's actually showing them, no, you surrender even more, even that thing that's most dear to you. You give that to me, just like in Nectar of Devotion, it's explained one should surrender that which is most dear to one. So then the more we do that, the more reciprocation. Because ultimately anything other than Krishna, any attachments that or shelters that we have other than Krishna is not satisfied. It's like a disease. It's like a cancer. But replacing that with the true shelter, the reality, the spiritual reality, that Krishna can satisfy all our desires. All the bodily needs that we have, all the mental needs, all the intellectual needs, Krishna is the only one that can actually satisfy those. And mostly the needs of the heart, of the soul, trying to fill that need with so many artificial things is obviously a great burden and waste of time, and prevents us from what Krishna wants to offer us. He's just standing on the altar every day, just waiting for his devotees to come. But even though then we still maintain so many things, so many attachments, we're still there. We're simultaneously joyful and discouraged to see Krishna, because we know he wants something from us. He wants our attachments. So we're very joyful about Govindam. But also then we're thinking, uh-oh, I have this and I need this. And so we're sometimes in a perplexed situation. Dichotomy is going on. But then we see the devotees and we hear their prayers, and it gives us faith, actually, that that's what we should do. That's the best program. Thank you, Prabhu. Is that okay? Can you clarify that? Maybe sometimes we're aware of it. You mean the attachments? Yeah, sometimes we're aware of it. But very advanced devotees, they're not. They don't have to worry about that problem. They're always ecstatic. Like we were hearing this pastime of Prabhupada when he went up to the altar in New York, you know, after doing great travel and very exhausted, but he came to take darshan of the deities. And he's standing there in the pujari and says, oh, what is this water? Is something leaking? There's a big puddle there. Prabhupada's tears are shooting from Prabhupada's eyes. They're getting him wet. So they took that water and put it on their head. So the pure devotee, he doesn't have to worry about that problem. He's surrendered. He's given up all these attachments. Guruji?
Guruji, thanks a lot for the wonderful class. So this question is not about fixed up devotees like you, Acharya and Ashtar. This question is more about devotees who are at the ground level. So, I don't know if you met Uttama Shloka Prabhu. He came last week. Mm-hmm. And before that, we had another devotee. The devotee name lies out. I should remember the name. But the thing is, those devotees who are movement for long, but Uttama Shloka Prabhu gave a statistic that about 15 to 20 people took initiation vows along with him. And out of them, only 3 people are actually currently even following the process. And I think that devotee, I should remember the name of that. Madhavendra Puri Prabhu also gave a very similar statistic.
So you have to beat the odds.
So I'm trying to understand why that's happening. And where I am currently, my angle is, a lot of times devotees stress this thing that don't keep anything for yourself, give everything to Krishna. And for any kind of devotee, for any level of devotee, that makes complete sense. Even if that devotee is not at that level, even if his faith is not fixed up, that instruction makes complete sense.
Okay.
And he might be tempted at that moment to make some, to take some steps towards that goal. But because his faith is not at that level, when he is doing that, after 1 or 2 years he realizes what exactly has he committed to, and then he starts backing out. So, I mean, that's how I saw it. Please correct me. So what's the precise thing that someone who is at the ground level do? He should act at the level of his faith and gradually improve, or should he say, from tomorrow I should give 100% to Krishna?
Generally, we should act according to our ability, our capacity. That Krishna explains that acting according to one's position is called piety. And trying to do maybe something that's beyond our adhikar is called impiety. So, at the same time though, we should appreciate and try to cultivate a very deep respect and appreciation for the objective or the goal or the opportunity to make great strides in spiritual life in this movement. That I may not have, you know, all the faith required, but actually everything is there. Everything is given. It's like you buy some toy or something, and it has all the pieces, like a Lego or something. Sorry for the mundane example, but all the pieces are there. So even I may not be very advanced, but if I just really take that and I study the instructions very carefully, it doesn't matter where I'm at. Everything is included. So if we culture very great respect, that actually, very soberly understanding this movement, these instructions, the spiritual master can give me everything I need, you know, to, of course, stick with this program and go back and ultimately go back to Godhead, then that should be the more that we meditate on that and the more that we can appreciate that, then we will see that our faith will increase. But we may not want to step outside of our capacity so much. But at the same time, even that, there's no loss. That's actually also for our benefit. I don't think there should be there doesn't have to be a great disparity. Ultimately, we should try to surrender as much as possible. And that should be our focus. And in the future, if we have some sort of way of looking back that, oh, I surrendered too much at that point in time, that's a little, kind of artificial regret. That may be a material consideration. Oh, I surrendered and I did so much service, but now look at me. That's not the right way to see. That's not a proper perspective. A devotee may consider, wow, look at how much progress you made. Despite where you're, whatever is going on now, you made so much progress that will be with you forever. So I think there's different ways of seeing that. I'm not so qualified to give a good answer. Maybe Jai Jagannath can share something.
I was thinking about how I could be discouraging those figures. You said it right. 18 we are. And so one feels discouraged hearing such figures over and over and over and over and over again. So then considering our inner situation, how long it's still for me, especially when these great, powerful personalities we in the beginning, out of a sentiment, just like that verse from the Bhagavad Bhajan, someone's immature in his Bhajan, so he falls down to immaturity. So he feels that, oh, I've surrendered too much. Then the next solution doesn't have to be nothing. Then why can't the next solution just be, okay, that means from where I'm at, honestly, it takes steps from there. And I was trying to find a quote for it. Where in the eighth canto, I mentioned this before, where Gajendra Moksha pastime, so he's fighting the crocodile for 1,000 celestial years. And he finally comes to the conclusion, I'm about to lose, I'm about to die. So it says that he thought for a long time. And then after he decides to surrender Krishna, so Prabhupada also reported right around that area about how. Anyway, he also spoke about how some of his followers who were sannyasis have fallen down from their positions of sannyas due to being in an unnatural situation. He says, but they should not leave the Krishna conscious movement. Rather, it would be better for them to join the Kasta ashram and continue to practice Krishna consciousness from there. So if one comes to the conclusion that I've surrendered too much, it need not be a nothing position.
I need to take a few steps back so I can
take a few more steps forward.
Yeah, not necessarily.
The question is, would they have been better off in the same way? Would they have been better off not surrendering or taking sannyas and in the future breaking that? And, that's up for argument. I think by reason, one can argue either side of the situation. Once on the side of they should have done this, Prabhupada was starting a movement, it was an emergency situation. He knew many of his followers weren't going to be able to maintain, but he anyway gave them that position.
That's one side of the argument. The other side is like, but the real answer is that a person may not be able to gauge his level of faith and what he has capacity to actually do. Generally, we can find the experience that in the association with devotees, we feel like we can do a lot more than we really understand our capacity. We feel like, I can do this, I can do that. And anything a devotee asks us to do, we're like, yes, yes, yes. We're like totally fired up. And then after a few months or a few years even, is too much. So that's what the verse that Narayana is saying, but John Paco, due to immaturity in their practice, they may realize, oh, I'm too attached, or I don't know, there's going to be offense or whatever. So at that time, they have to reevaluate. So it's, you know, that process of reevaluation will continue all the way up until you achieve perfection. So again, I think the answer still follows that if I have taken some steps of surrender and it was deemed too much, then one reevaluates and then takes it from there with steps he has to make. I think one could argue either side if this was good or that, but it's ultimately, as Acharya just pointed out, it's ultimately for the good. And that's not everyone's point in that verse, that even if they fall down to immaturity, what is the loss? So it's ultimately, it's for the good, it's an accumulation of piety, which flows on to future existences and so on. Krishna's point also for the Gita, what is that verse? You know, the famous one.
Happy change.
So I think if we look at it from the scale of eternity, then it's all good. You know, it's all good, definitely. Whether someone comes for 5 minutes, commits an offense, goes away, ultimately, all good from the viewpoint and perspective of eternity, and it carries on. If we try to analyze if we look myopically just from this one life, then it's going to look disastrous. But if we look at it from a broader perspective, you know, it's great. So I don't know, it need not be all or nothing. It's like, we may surrender too much. I suppose I turned the Brahmacharya ashram. You know, what happens is, and then after 2 or 3 years, I'm going to get married. And it might be a sign of embarrassment because of having a certain mentality in the beginning. But then, having engaged us with the situation, okay, 2 steps back, perhaps we're taking 3 steps forward. What is the ultimate loss? It's all glorious. Otherwise, what was a person doing before the devotional service in this age of Kali? Be real. Sometimes people say, well, you convinced them to surrender, and now look at their life. Well, where was their life like before devotional service? They were heading actually straight towards the hellish regions or the lower life forms. So actually, whatever they've been able to do is certainly wonderful. Whether the devotees who are caused by anguish in the future or not, but it's certainly good for them, and it will continue such a spiritual life.
I think also one thing is, of course, intelligence, that we should execute our activities with intelligence. And a big part for us is guidance, that really talking with someone who knows us and making intelligent decisions helps remove some of the perhaps fears or complications or, you know, things like that. That's a big principle, actually. If someone really knows us well over time and we make intelligent steps, then that there's no... Again, no loss. Another point, I think, that's just...
You know, because in association with a guru or something, you feel like, I can't do this. Or sometimes they give a certain direction and people are not forthcoming about what they have capacity to do or not. So they just say, well, with the instruction of the spiritual master comes the empowerment to carry it out. And they go on like that for a couple of years, and after a couple of years, I'm not feeling that empowerment, you know, I need to stop.
Well, I think from the interaction with the guru, but a lot of times some of our day-to-day things is given by someone else that may not have such a weight of gravity that, yeah, I have to accept whatever he says, but I can more, maybe sometimes honestly approach, reveal my heart, and I think that's some nice points for that question, so thank you. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gaura Premanandi, full surrender ki. Yeah.